The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
No, I won't mention it, Martin Shannon. Yeah.
Don't mention it.
Now they'll want to know what
oh, shit, that's it. That's,
they'll know.
What
are you not to mention? What are you not to mention there? Anyway, that's Martin Shannon, and Martin Shannon is in to guide us through the soundtrack to his life. Good afternoon, Martin Shannon. That's the official welcome to the show. You're on tenterhooks because your daughter Lucy is show jumping in Spain.
As we speak, yes. So I'm hoping she's in the arena now, and I'm hoping she's going to have a clear round.
Right.
And Lucy, if you're listening, which you won't be, but obviously, be home on Monday because you have to go back to school.
Right. What age is Lucy?
Lucy is 17.
All right. She's in Leaving Cert this year?
No, fifth year.
Fifth year.
Out of ponies and now into horses. So she's gone all the way back down to the bottom of the tier again, and hopefully she'll get up and climb up the ladder.
And was that something you were into? Horses or?
I loved horses. Yeah. I think, I mean, horses were in, I mean, they were in our family, they were in our blood, yeah. My grandfather had a horse. I think one of my first memories was the clip-clop of horses.
Yeah, yeah.
I think from the age of eight, he brought me to every pint-to-pint meeting in Cork. Pint-to-pints are a bit like, I suppose, the racing, right? They try.
But they're in fields.
They're not in race courses. So, I mean, my memory of horses was always there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And Lucy, where are the other children?
Jack at the moment is 23 and he's lucky enough to be in Melbourne. He took a year out and made up his mind there in July and said, "Mom, Dad, I'm heading off to Australia." So he's in Australia and Ben is at home in Fishy, I hope, at the moment, with his mum holding the fort.
Yeah.
Holding the fort, yeah. So all good.
Right. You know how this works, don't you?
No, but tell me.
Hey, it's pretty straightforward. I'm telling people the story of your life and you tell us along the way what sounds you remember from various times in your life.
Okay, right.
So you were born on the 12th of May 1962 to Tim and Eilish.
That's Eileen.
Eileen,
come on, Eileen.
Come on, Eileen. And where were you born?
I can't remember.
You must have been told at some stage along the
way. I was told, yeah. Funny enough, Ray, I asked my mum on the way up, right? I was driving up and I got to Kildare and I said, "Oh, I better phone her. Ma'am, where was I born?" And she said to me, she couldn't remember either. Honest to God, yeah. She said, "Ma'am, if you're listening," right? She said, "I'm nearly sure you were born in St. Enns in Fermoy," which was like it wasn't a private nursing home, but it was somewhere where a lot of people in Fermoy would have been born,
right,
rather than having to go to Cork to the hospital, yeah.
Right.
So I believe I was born there, and she informed me that when she brought me home, she had no cot for me, or either that or the cot was being used, and that I was kept in the bottom drawer of a dresser in the front room.
See, I always think that's made up.
Well, Ray, how could it be made up in my life? Right?
Sorry, Eileen. I'm not saying that you're making things up.
No, but see, I'm from quite a large family. I have four brothers and three sisters.
Right.
That's it. And then my mum and my dad and my grandmom and my grandfather, we all lived together in a three-bedroomed house.
Right.
Isn't that amazing? Anybody out there looking for an apartment, think about where we lived. Yeah?
Do the maths on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So where are you in the eight?
If you can be the middle child of eight, I'm the middle child of eight. So I would have been number four.
Number four, right.
I would have been number four. In my experience, and I think a lot of people that are middle children, like my middle boy Ben of three, you know, you tend to paddle your own canoe and you tend to kind of, it's not that you get forgotten, right? But, you know, either the younger ones are being reared and the older ones are gone. So I was in the middle. So I learned to be independent.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time with my grandfather. And again, look, mad into sport, bowling. You remember road bowling?
Yeah.
We used to go road bowling, horses, anything to do, you know, and I started work at 11 years of age.
But you were still at school?
I was still at school,
yes,
of course,
yeah.
I was at school, and I mean, after school I went and I worked. I helped my grandfather. He'd done a couple of errands for a lovely family in Fermoy, Dick and Margaret Barry, and they had a pub and an auctioneering business and that, and my father would run a couple of errands, and I'd say he probably got a few bob and a few points for it.
Yeah.
No, I got no points. But as he got older, I mean, I would have stocked the bar and, you know, done those things. Like, the bar only opened 9 to 5. Yeah?
It was great to get paid, you know, because I remember I was working at the age of 9 and it's just great to have your own money, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's the best thing that any kid can have, the independence of that. And I hope my mother is listening, that I wasn't too much of a draw on them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because when you're eight, look, you know, when you're the middle child, you can see below you and above you. and my mother and father, right? I mean, you know, on a Monday, like, my mum would open her purse. She wouldn't show you what was in the purse, but I guarantee you there wasn't a hell of a lot.
No.
So, look, I suppose from that time on, you know, you had your own money, so I would have bought my own clothes and I would have, you know. No, I probably picked out a lot of terrible things, but... You know, at least I justified it.
Are you still picking out your own clothes?
Yeah, thanks. Marie, if you're listening, Ray doesn't like the topic. I'm only joking.
A bit clashy.
Yeah, but maybe
some people do that on purpose. So, you were saying the clip cloppy, and we had the clip cloppy there of horses, but people know what that sounds like. When was the first time you started to realise where you were in the world, if you know what I mean? Like, whether you were outgoing or were you shy or...
Oh, I'd say... Do you know what? I was shy and I was quiet for a long time. I would be kind of... In school, I would have sat at the back and taken it all in, right, without saying too much.
Right.
And I think, really, when I went to Rockwell, I'd done my Leaving Cert, left from my... Didn't know what I wanted to be in life, believe it or not, right? But about 3 months before I finished my Leaving... Back in the day, there was no career guidance and there was no, you know, probably direction, right? But I went to Christian Brothers in Fermoy, and across the road, there was another school there, and there was interviews for Rockwell College to train to be a chef. And myself and a good friend of mine, we said, you know what, we'll scam the whole afternoon off, we'll go over. And luckily enough, I got the position. And from there, I went to Rockwell. I think really when I hit Rockwell, I realised, okay, this is the big bad world.
Yeah. And was that because you'd worked in the bar?
I think the bar influence, and I think serving people, you know, and, you know, I mean, back in the day, Ray, if you remember, you might have popped into the bar with your uncle or your dad or whatever, right? Guinness, there was two temperatures. There was cold and there was room temperature. So,
and Guinness drinkers were very fussy about
how
it was poured and who poured it.
And who poured it,
They didn't want to see a young lad
pouring
it.
Not at all. I mean, like, they would look at you, no, go away there, young fly. You know, Mary is the best at pulling points. And after a while, right, to be fair, I mean, you know, I worked for another guy, Tim Duggan, and he was brilliant because Tim educated me a lot about business and just looking after customers. And I think I got that.
I got that love.
And I liked it, yeah.
And I suppose, whether you're consciously aware of this or not, you feel that you're good at it.
I think, you know what, I mean, the greatest satisfaction I believe in life is pleasing somebody.
Yeah.
That is my greatest satisfaction.
Well,
you're a
people pleaser.
Yeah.
And you're in the business to
We're
please
in the,
people.
Yeah.
Back in the day when you were pulling the pint, because I worked in the bar as well, did you have to, we had that, it's a ritual, isn't it? That you hold the glass a certain way and you pour it down the side of the glass. And then when the head is settled, we used to have a knife.
Yeah, that's right.
You skim the top of the head off.
Is that the old butter knife, yeah?
Yeah.
Remember, I don't know whether it had a bit of ivory in the bottom of it, but, you know, and it had to be a special, you know, it had to be that special thing. And again, look, everybody had their little quirk and that, no, leave it the way it is, don't touch it. And if they saw a bubble on the top of the Guinness, you were extradited. I mean,
it's all coming back to me now. So you sort of filled it three quarters, let it settle a bit, and then came back to it.
And then topped it up, yeah?
Yeah.
And then as the customer came in the door, right, I mean, Tim Duggan would say to me, Martin, what does he like? Oh, he's 3 3/4 a quarter. And what's he?
He's half and half. Yeah.
So what's 3 3/4 and a quarter? 3 1/4 cold and top it up with a quarter room temperature.
Uh-huh.
And the other person would be a half and a half. But very important that you memorize that.
Yes.
Because if you didn't memorize it and you upset the customer, well, he wouldn't ask you again.
And then there was the Smiddix with a Guinness head?
That's right, there was Smiddix and there was barley wine and... Well, I never tasted any...
No, of course you didn't. No. Of course you didn't. Right. So you skipped on there to your Leaving Cert. We just go back a little bit because you had a TV in the house, black and white.
We had a black and white TV and I remember it. I remember, well, radio was very big in our house as well, but definitely TV. But I'd say after school, in the spring, summer, we didn't watch a lot of TV because, look, I mean, I lived in a street with 50 houses. The family across the road from us, believe it or not, there was 17 kids. Next door, there was 8. If you came from my street, Clancy Street in Fermoy, you had no worry about being beaten up or being threatened because if anything ever happened, there was about another 150 kids behind you.
Supporting you.
Right,
we've three theme tunes here from you don't yeah, look there,
oh,
don't
sorry,
look there.
Okay.
I'll play them and you tell me what the program is. Here we go.
The Flintstones
is correct.
Yeah. What's that? Do it again. Da, 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 da. No, it's not.
Yeah, go on,
No, that's Sesame Street.
Yay! And number three, you'll get this one. So they're the programs you were watching back
yeah,
in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. I mean, they were the ones, right? And they were the, you know, you sat there and you were just glued to the telly, you know? Yeah. And I mean, you know, there was no mobile phones. There was no other distraction, you know? Yeah. And
well, it was a small house and you had what? You had eight and two and two. What's yep. that? That's 12.
That's 12.
12 people in it.
And then my cousin, when we went to school, believe it or not, and we did go to school, all of us, right? Every day at 5 to 1, my mum and my grandmother are grey cooks, right? And they would lock the front door. And then if you left out of school at 5 to 1, you'd run up, but you'd get in the gate and there was a little pathway. You went to the door was locked. And we had to create a queue. And my dad was always forced to get his dinner,
right?
And after that, there was the table only held six, so there could only be six fed in the first sitting. It's like a restaurant almost, yeah? So we're booked out. Six in the first sitting, and if you didn't get on that first sitting, you either had to queue outside the door, you weren't allowed in, and if it was raining, you could sit in the steps of the stairs on the way, right? And then you got your dinner the second sitting. Yeah?
So you had your dinner in the middle of the day?
We had our dinner, yeah. Look, back in the day, we had our dinner in the middle of the day.
And it was a three-course.
Well, food was very important in our household, and I think in any household back in the day, right, food was, you know, was fuel. And lunch was the big dinner, I suppose, was served in the middle of the day. And my mum and my grandmother, and I think maybe that's where I got my touch of food from, right? I mean, we would have had three courses. You were guaranteed there was soup in the winter time to start. Then you had protein, meat, fish, chicken. You had vegetables, potatoes, and dessert afterwards. You know,
and then back to school with a
back to school with a full tummy, and you'd go to sleep for the afternoon. Yeah. You'd learn nothing. But I would say, if I can, Ray, I mean, you know, we always kind of, when I got older, I realised when times were tight, yeah, because they were great cooks, right? But when money was tight, we might have ended up on a Wednesday with stuffed sheep's hearts or cow's heart or a bit of liver.
And they'd have been cheap from the
butcher.
And
they would have been cheaper. And nothing wrong, they're magnificent. They're magnificent cuts of meat, you know, and I think...
But they're saying that's a problem now, that we don't eat enough of the cow and the sheep and the pig.
Exactly, yeah, you know.
And then that's why we have a problem with, you know, that's part of the problem. It's just that we're eating all the good bits and all the rest of it's gone.
It's gone, exactly. Yeah, yeah. We don't have that problem with fish, but we won't get into that.
No. No, because we would have had liver and kidney regularly.
Exactly, yeah. Look, I mean, I think my own three kids, I'd have to ask them, have you ever had liver or kidneys? I reckon they haven't.
Right.
You know? And it's a shame. It is a shame,
Right, so teenager, Rockwell you went at the age of?
At the age of 17 and a half, I went to Rockwell College.
So let's go back to then the sort of secondary school years then. Mm-hmm. What sort of a teenager were you?
I love sport. I played soccer and Gaelic. I played hurling badly. Always followed the horses. I think I got that, like I say, from a very young age. Yeah. But on top of following them, I backed them, you know. And I remember the first time backing the horses, and obviously my mum and my dad were big into, you know, a penny and a horse and that. And we backed the horse anyhow, and the horse was running at 2 o'clock, got home at 4, said, "Mom, how did the horse do?" And she said, "He's still running." I'm like, "What, he's running since 2 o'clock?" So that was the term. He didn't do very well. He didn't do very well, you know.
You took her literally.
I took her literally. He's still running, you know. You know, but I think probably growing up at 14, 15, I would have worked, like I say. I mean, I worked every Saturday. I started to work on a Saturday night in the bar, and then my friends would be out at 15, 16, socialising, and I would meet them still at 11 o'clock. Yeah. Night or half 11, and you know, they would have had a couple of lemonades, and I'd make sure I had the lemonade fast with them. And then we'd go to the, there was a very famous club in Fermoy called the Top Hat. And I remember seeing, look, all the big bands at the time, Horselips, and everybody and anybody there, you know. And you know, but I think, you know, now that I look back at it, I suppose. I always felt I was going to travel,
and
I always felt I was going to, you know.
To for Moy wasn't big enough for you. I know.
I'll never be able to go back to For Moy now, you know. I wouldn't say it was big enough for me, but I think as I get older, I'm very inquisitive and curious, yeah. And you know.
So then, cut to Rockwell. That's a catering college.
Catering college. So I went to Rockwell as a trainee chef through an organisation called CERT, which is no longer, but a government organisation. The course was 2 years. When I say 2 years, it was two kind of school years during the school year. So our job basically was to feed the students, the paying students, right?
Because it's a boarding school.
It's a boarding school. Yes. So we would have cooked for them, and there was a farm there. Magnificent training, but I'm telling you, it was hard work.
But isn't that brilliant, though, the model, if you like?
Oh, the model is brilliant. And if I had an opportunity today, I would reintroduce it, you know, to the younger kids of today. You know?
Because you were fulfilling a function.
Exactly, yeah.
So it was real.
It was real. And we were feeding them. I mean, Manny's morning, I remember around Christmas time, going out and picking Brussels sprouts, right? At 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and the frost and those Brussels sprouts were served to those students at lunchtime, you know?
And was there any feeling of inequality there? Yeah, you know, that you were working in these boys?
Of course there was. Look, I mean, sure, like anything, I suppose, you know, when you're young, you don't realise, but, you know, you look back now and yes, they were paying kids and we were like the hired help, the cheap labour, you know? Yeah. But with the cheap labour, I mean, look, we survived it. A lot of us survived it. A lot of guys kind of gave up and realised after a very short time that it wasn't for them, you know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we had to do everything then. I mean, you came in the morning. We started every morning at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock in the morning, got up. 5:30 was mass, religiously, at 5:30. You had your breakfast then at 6 o'clock, and at 6:30 you were in the main kitchen.
Right.
And you were
working
there and preparing for lunch, you know.
Can you remember how many pupils were in Rockwell at the time?
Oh, I reckon there must have been probably 400 or 500 pupils, you know. So it was a lot of,
it's a big catering,
and on top of that, then you might do that for a week or every second day. And then the other days you were in class and you were learning all the...
Okay. Let's take a break for a clip. So where does this piece of music fit into your life?
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do?
I think around 18 or 19. Definitely, I was realising the big world was out there.
Yeah. So where did you go to in the big bad world after Rockwell?
Rockwell, luckily enough, the first year in Rockwell, which would have been the summer, so I came out in May and I got a placement in the Butler Arms Hotel in Waterville, County Kerry, right down in South Kerry, one of the most beautiful parts of the world. And I worked with a great family that are still there, Peter and Mary Huggard. And again, they were brilliant, you know. They were so enthusiastic and so helpful and so willing to teach.
Yeah.
And I loved that, you know. And I just, that was really... Really, really, I'd say my first great love of fish.
Yeah.
Because I realised, you know, you could cook 100 portions of any kind of fish every night, not a bother. You could cook one fillet steak and the customer would send it back because his version of well done and my version of well done were chalk and cheese.
Yeah. And when did you go? Was it Germany you went to
then,
first?
Yeah. Yes, and then luckily after that, I came back to Rockwell, went back to Waterville and then Peter Huggard, if you're listening, Peter said to me, Martin, we would love to send you off to Switzerland or Germany for the winter to get a bit more experience and come back if you will come back to us. I said, I'd be delighted. So I ended up in Germany and I ended up in a city called Dortmund, very famous soccer club, Borussia Dortmund. Loved the soccer then and went and I worked there for 6 months, had a great time and had no German whatsoever, struggled probably for the first 3-4 months, homesick. Used to go into a bar in the centre of Dortmund where there was a lovely old lady there and she could speak English and she said, I will teach you German if you teach me English.
Right. Nice relationship.
It was a lovely relationship. I mean, there was about 40 years of difference between us, but it was lovely, honestly. And I never went to school. Probably looking back, I should have gone to school in Germany and learned the German. But kitchen German, anyhow, you learn it very fast because. And one of the things I remember coming back the first year was in Germany in the kitchen, the chef would call the order and you always had to say yeah to answer, so he knew that
yes,
you heard
understood.
It.
Yeah.
So when I came back from Germany the first year, I think I was like a parrot. Yeah. And they're like, what happened to you? And so came back to Waterville and then went back out to Germany and spent a year and a half full time out there.
Right.
And in that time there, magnificent restaurant with three different operations in it, and we used to do outside catering. So we done outside catering to this magnificent stadium where Borussia Dortmund play, and they had an indoor and an outdoor hall. The indoor hall was the biggest in Europe, so every band in the world came
and
to play.
And did you cook for them?
Well, I personally put my hand in it, yeah. I sprinkled the salt.
Like who are we talking?
Everybody from David Bowie, Supertramp, Men at Work, Pink Floyd, Christa Berg. I remember Christa Berg coming into a restaurant and coming over to me and shaking my hand, and his wife, lovely, and saying, it's lovely to meet an Irish person here. And that was 30-something years ago, you know? But yeah, it was, look, I mean, I had an amazing time there, you know?
Well, when did you meet Marie?
Oh,
is it Marie or Marie?
Marie. So when I came back, from Germany, I spent one more summer in Waterville. So that would have been 84. Then I came to Kinsale and I worked for Jim and Paul Edwards. Great family, great employers, still there 50 years later. And I came to work with Jim and Paula. And then after about a month, Marie arrived on the scene. So Marie had come down from Cork, 16 and a half. I think I was 21 and a half, maybe. I think that's 5 years of a difference. And we just struck up. And what I mean, she was full of fun and life and innocence. And I remember one day putting a piece of salmon on the plate. And she said, I don't recognize it. And I said, what do you mean? We only have it in the can. And look, in the afternoon, you know, when you've done a split shift as a chef, right, you were off in the afternoons, and we'd go for a walk over to the Bullman for, probably a Lucozade and a packet of potatoes back in the day, or you go up to the folk house to play a game of pool or walk over to the dock. And I'd say, do you know what, after about 3 weeks, I asked her to marry me.
Did you? You're still together?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
That's 34 years together, and I think we're 32 years married, I hope.
Right.
You know, those numbers always get me.
So, San Francisco, did you decide to go to San Francisco together?
No, well, yes, of course, sure, I had to marry then.
Yes.
So we got married in 87, and then in 87, I convinced her. I said, look, I had a great friend at the time, Liam Dorgan, Lord of Mercenham, lived in San Francisco, born there, came back to Famai, went back out there, set up his own business, electrical business, and he said, come on, lads, come over, it's a great, great city, great time, and got married. And of course, Marie said to me, why are you leaving again? But I think that's the chef, you know, you're always looking for the challenge or the next little bit of excitement, you know?
We have a clip here, because this is while you were over in San Francisco, and it happened in 1989, there was an earthquake, but on the same day as the earthquake, there was a big game on.
That's right.
So it was the 1989 World Series, Oakland Athletics featuring versus San Francisco Giants. I think it was around the beginning of the game, and listen to the commentary.
He fails to get Dave Parker at second base, so the Oakland A's take.
I'll tell you what, we're having an earthquake.
In the history of television, bar none. Yes, it certainly did. We're still here. We will be back, we hope, from San Francisco in just a moment.
And where were you when the earthquake happened?
I remember it, Ray, as if it was yesterday. I was in the kitchen in the hotel I worked in, the Huntington Hotel up in Nob Hill, and I was the chef in a big four restaurant there. I was standing at the cooker talking to one or two guys about what we were doing for the evening. And at 4:05, I can feel the cooker and the kitchen just shake, right? The pans, the pots, the plates, everything just crashed. And one of the guys working with me just caught me by the shoulder and put me under a door frame as such, right? And I said, what's happening? He said, it's an earthquake. I was like, oh. And I would say probably after 30 seconds, it kind of settled. Now you could still, but it's very hard to describe until you're in one, right? That kind of how it happens, you know? So where am
and
I
you were lucky because there were a number of fatalities.
Oh, huge!
63
yeah.
people were
I mean, the amount of damage. Luckily, I think they said the reason that there wasn't as many fatalities is because of the World Series. People had finished work early
to go and watch it.
Yeah, and. Again, if anybody, I'm sure lots of people, California Street, the top of California Street, Nob Hill, the cable cars run up and down there and go down to the financial district. And after about an hour or two, I mean, there was no mobile phones back then.
Yeah.
After about 2 hours of kind of straightening out and talking to the manager, I said, look, I just need to go and see if my wife's okay. So I remember walking down California Street and there was pandemonium. I mean, look, you know, there was bits of buildings falling out onto the street. And I turned a corner on Front Street where she had worked in the Royal Exchange, and the building next to her, all the top of it had fallen out. And I actually remember climbing over the rubble and going in. And when I went in, they're all sitting up at the bar drinking. Oh, how are you? You know, and I was like, you know, but everybody was in shock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was shock.
Of course,
for,
now there would have been mobile phones,
yeah. But it was shock for a long time, yeah.
Now, we're running out of time. That's the way it always happens. Grew up at Martin in Fermoy. Great guy. Listening on my way to Fermoy from Bettystown to see my mother. That's Don Hammond. And I'm 51 now. And when I was born, I slept in the bottom drawer. So I'm not the only one, says Jacqueline. I was born in St. Anne's Nursing Home too in Fermoy. Good place. And my mother never sat down to eat. She ate what was left in the pot. The five of us didn't starve, says Helen.
Yeah.
And top hat from Moya. Remember the night Marianne Faithfull tripped and fell as she entered the stage many years ago, but yet a wonderful performance as Finbar and Cork. So there you go.
Well, listen, you're
flying it. The restaurant's flying it.
Yeah, things are great. Look, Kinsale is flying at the moment this week. Can I throw one plug in?
Will you? Better be quick.
Kinsale Restaurant Week. I believe it's booked out, but two courses for €20. It's been a massive success and I believe it'll come back again.
Right. Martin Shannon, always a pleasure. Great.
Thank you very much.
Mind yourself and safe home to West Cork.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.